Welcome to This Week in Money. I'm Jim Goddard. Today, Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com runs down the major markets. There was a meltdown across the board after President Trump made his tariffs announcement. Ross says it could take the rest of the year to recover, and he warns against trying to time the bottom of the market with option calls. Editor of Rick's Picks, Rick Ackerman, says the markets were ready for a major correction, and he doesn't believe they'll be in the red for more than 3 to 5 weeks. He also has some very specific targets you might watch for if you're a bottom timer. Rick also has a special offer for our listeners. Editor of WallStreetWindow.com, Mike Swanson, says most stock markets were ripe for a downturn. He's concerned there could be bigger drops ahead for quite some time. He points out gold and silver have been outperforming the stock markets, and he believes that could continue to be the case. We'll talk to Ross Clark right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com. Welcome to This Week in Money, the source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com, where you'll find insightful market commentary and timely technical analysis. You can find him on X at Charts by Ross. Welcome back to the show.
Quite a week it was, Jim.
So the markets, after all the Trump tariff announcements, the reaction around the world, would you call it a little negative?
Would you say that it was just immediate? Yes, yeah. But you know what? We've been having this raging bull market since 2009. And, you know, it was just, there are so many valuations that were so high, and it was just going to be some kind of a catalyst, whether it was this calendar quarter or somewhere down the road. We were just on the edge and, you know, definitely in need of a big correction. The question was, how deep was it going to be? And this one is turning into be quite interesting. It's the credit markets, other than the bond, the treasuries, I've been looking pretty heavy here. You look at the high yields, the JNKs and HYG indices there, definitely showing some real pressure on the credit side of the equation. And, you know, we're doing this rolling top as far as the equity markets were concerned, and had a good oversold reading there in March, and the bounce to the minimum upside of target on a reaction into 10 days ago, good short-term overbought readings, and then started to roll over. And, you know, it was looking like it was maybe a rotational market where, you know, the big Mag 7s were going to continue to erode away because they've had just a phenomenal time, and the money would flow into more secure items. But it's turned out to be more than a rotation. It's a get-me-out market, the GMO. People are just finally now, in the last 48 hours, looking to raise cash. And, you know, here we are. If you've been in the industry long enough, and I first was introduced back to the early 70s, and this is, we get these kind of moves, you know, not that often. Every 5, 10, 15 years, something will come up, fall apart. A few of them have ended up in pretty big crashes, you know, 1987, quick and dirty. The 2000-2002 move was a more of a labored move on the downside. But this one looks as though it's still got a fair amount of room to go as far as the downward progression is concerned. The 17-year cycle we look at should ideally bottom out sometime second half of this year into next year. And it could be a pretty deep correction. We've got, you know, if you look back historically, this is, since the major peaks, what do we got? You got 1907, 1929, 1973, 87, and 2000. All of those, the end of nice long runs, and they all gave back 50% of the move. In this case, you know, we're talking about an S&P, which is right now just over 5,000. The 50% correction on this takes us down to 3,400. So worst case scenario, maybe that's what we're looking at in the second half of this year. That's a pretty deep move. And, you know, those kind of things don't happen overnight, other than, say, in 87, which it took from a Thursday until the following Monday. But other than that, they usually step down. So there's a number of opportunities along the way. And various sectors do then start to show resilience after the first hard breaks. So technically, we've got some good spots to look for possible lows. The corrective rallies would be the sort of natural levels that we'll look for on the bounces. We've got those at this point. We don't have the numbers, but we know what the percentages should look like. So we will be looking for that.
What's going on with gold?
Well, so, you know, this is a bit like everybody running and looking for a safe haven. They pushed the gold market to new highs, just a darn good move as the tariff announcements came out. We did peak at just shy of 3,200. Now, we've had targets up here around 3,300, but the patterns here on the daily, weekly, and monthly were all showing good upside targets having been met. And signs of, you know, the getting tired. You look at the miners, things like the GDXJ, those were starting to show divergences at the top end of the move. So for all that the money moved towards the bonds and gold market as a safe haven, it really, during these times of uncertainty, you get that flash move into those. But if you know, if you look back at things like 1987, the gold market spurted up as the market crashed. But then, as soon as the market found an interim low, the gold market rolled over. So, from what I can see in gold at this point, wouldn't be at all surprised to see us back under 2,600. We're at 3,000 and change right now. It's, you know, for a while it's looked as though it could be ready to roll over, and this week is definitely showing more signs of that. You look at silver sitting along the same lines. It's been sitting in a longer term cycle, had the potential to break out, but couldn't. We've got some numbers that we look at on things like the relative strength index, you know, not the dailies, but weeklies and monthlies. Those were having trouble breaking out. It was a big sign of caution, a warning that we had out there. And so, you know, silver's taken on the nose, which is not surprising, because once the market starts to roll, silver tends to be hit harder than the gold market. I do think that once we get a nice cycle low in place here, there's going to be the chances of a pretty good move into next year. But it's going to be a matter of having patience. We do have the sort of modeling that we'll be watching to see when this thing is ready to go, but definitely it's only for the short-term traders to be looking at maybe some trading opportunities here in the near future, not to put the big money in place.
What's going on in the crude oil market?
Bit of a surprise to me. I thought we would hold up better than we did. We were coming nicely off the bottom. Between the announcements on the tariffs and then OPEC talking about an increase, then it's just hammered this market as much as anything. You know, here we are at under $62 at the end of the week. This is going to take quite a while to base out down here. You know, no, I don't have really any big guidance in here. There were had some short-term sell signals that I just avoided a week ago. I thought, you know, maybe we'd get a minor pullback, but it was a lot more than that. So, you know, some work and some don't. And in this case, you know, it's wish I could have, but I didn't.
What's happening with the U.S. and Canadian dollars?
Well, the Canadian dollar definitely liked the tariff announcement, at least for 48 hours. And at this point, I don't think that, we rallied from what, just under 70 to over 71 cents. And that may be the best that the dollar does immediately here. Yeah, we're still unwinding those huge bearish positions that we saw in the commitment of traders levels in the first quarter of this year. Everybody was bearish on Canada. At this point, I think you just look at it as a consolidation phase. If anything, it might be looked at as a big sort of W kind of a bottom in here since the end of the year. And, maybe it's got better potential than I think, and the resilience of anything of the currency relative to commodities, like the ag commodities and the crude oil, has been pretty good for the last couple of weeks, which usually is supportive for the dollar. So we'll see at this point. I don't think there's enough in it to make it a big trade for anybody.
Anything else we should be keeping an eye on right now?
The copper market was one that also, like silver, sort of boxed itself in. It had a false breakout here at the top end of its range just, 5 or 6 days ago. But it loves to just eke out these new highs, these false breakouts. We call them an upthrust failure. And so here we were at $5.30 a week and a half ago. We close at $4.40 this week. To have had a chance to break out, it needed to hold at $4.75. With that not happening, it's going to take quite a while. And I know there's some really good long-term bullish stories about AI anything to do with the electrification of the world out here and what it will mean for copper, but this thing's going to take time to build for the next decent move. The bulls are really excited. There's a long-term cup and handle pattern that goes back the better part of about two decades now. If it can eventually get out of that, it's got some potential to go a long way. I hope people take advantage of our service, chartsandmarkets.com. We've got a 25% reduction right now on annual subscriptions. And, we welcome people to come aboard because it's market action like this that presents just, I think, excellent opportunities for people to move into the market. So take advantage of that. I know a lot of people are going to try and pick the bottom as far as this equity market's concerned right now. And, they're thinking of leverage, maybe using call options or something like that. I learned the lesson the hard way decades ago that at the bottom of these moves, you don't want to be buying something that's got a high premium. Because if you look at things like the VIX, the volatility index right now is up at 45. We've only been here a minimum number of times over the decades, the last time being in 2020. If you buy the bottom and it doesn't race back, you're going to lose money just because the premiums come out of those options so, so darn quickly. You ought to be a seller of premium rather than a buyer of it and having it erode away at you. So, I hope people recognize that and don't lose too much trying to bottom pick in here.
Ross, thank you so much for the update.
Good to be with you, Jim.
My guest has been Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com, where you'll find insightful market commentary and timely technical analysis. You can find him on X at Charts by Ross. Coming up, Rick Ackerman next on This Week in Money.
Always consult your investment professional before making any investment decision. This Week in Money is archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks. His website, rickackerman.com. He's speaking to us from South Florida. Welcome back to the show.
Always a pleasure, Jim. I certainly appreciate the chance to join you.
The original reason President Trump instituted tariffs on Canada and Mexico was to stop fentanyl and migrants from crossing the borders into the U.S. Is this mainly ignored by politicians and the media? And could the tariff wars escalate?
Well, he put it out there so that it couldn't be ignored. You know, when you say ignored, it means the papers are going to raise a Whoopi Goldberg stench about tariffs and, you know, how they're all wrong and this and that. So Trump put the emphasis on fentanyl just so that the usual idiots couldn't get around it. You know, they had to talk about it. And I don't know, you know, how much success we've had throttling fentanyl. As you were just saying a moment ago, it's not really a problem we're importing from Canada. It's mostly Mexico. And whatever we can speculate, really, we know Trump's going to drive a damned hard deal in shutting fentanyl out of this country.
Why would politicians in Canada want to have a tariff war with the U.S. instead of cleaning up fentanyl and migrant issues?
Nobody really wants a tariff war. And it's just a negotiating point that Trump has put out there. And while the papers are busy and Whoopi Goldberg screaming bloody murder about tariffs, you can bet that the negotiating is taking place behind the scenes.
The China tariffs seem to be ignored. Ever wonder why?
Well, I don't know. We have a full slate of tariffs going with China, but there's also the subterfuge of Chinese spying. So it's really not, the tariffs are not, they're not even the main focus with China. It's really the moral turpitude of their trading methods and of their spy net, which is, I guess, why they trade at all. They're just trying to steal everybody else's tricks.
President Trump has floated the idea of instituting tariffs and over time eliminating the federal income tax. Are there pros and cons to that?
Well, the pro and con is that it's never going to happen. You know, whatever is opposite the idea that, oh, we're good, that we can eliminate income tax, it's just not going to happen. And so I'm not quite sure why Trump put it out there that way, unless it's kind of like a let's turn Gaza into a sea resort kind of idea just to stimulate thinking. So maybe that's it. He's just sort of advancing the idea that the government really shouldn't have a claim on any of our money. It's certainly a worthwhile idea to pursue.
President Trump introduced the gold card path to American citizenship. Could he use the gold card to entice people to have their countries join the U.S., thinking of Canada and Greenland?
They really don't want to join. And, you know, again, he sort of put it out there. With Greenland, it puts into play something nobody really was thinking about, which is the strategic value of Greenland in terms of where it's located and how much it would do for our defenses against China, for one, if we controlled some of the airspace over Greenland. But those are, I don't think we're going to see U.S. and Greenland come under U.S. Canada and Greenland come under U.S. control anytime soon.
Could President Trump's art of the deal approach be causing people to question his credibility?
No, the opposite. They know that he's just a negotiator, and pretty much everything he's done is to try to hammer out a pretty good deal. And he's a good deal maker. So, no, it hasn't hurt his credibility at all, except with the usual idiots on the left.
If you use the art of the deal as a strategy, what do you think President Trump wants from Canada and other countries?
Just a fair and open trade. That's all, as open as possible. You know, get the flow of ideas and jobs going. And I think Trump really believes that U.S. resources alone, and I'm not just talking about physical resources, but the universities, the U.S. has the ability to become more self-sufficient than it is. And for that reason, the U.S. will be the main beneficiary of any deals. It's going to be win-win, but I think it'll be more win for the U.S. because we have probably the most where we can improve.
Elon Musk and Doge are finding massive amounts of fraud, money laundering, and corruption. Could that be positive or negative for the U.S. economy?
There is no downside for Musk, really. I mean, everything he does is like an epiphany. And again, you've got the usual idiots. I don't even know who these people are who are burning Teslas on the car lots. You know, what politics could they, what do they believe in? I don't know. But Musk can't lose. Everywhere he sticks his nose, he finds things that are fascinating, even to the New York piece of crap Times. So, and you can see that they're going a little more lightly on Musk these days because he's just turning up too much good stuff.
Do you think President Trump has the deep state swamp creatures on the run?
Well, we talked about Eisen before, and Eisen is really the point guard for the deep state. he's the lawfare part of it that is sort of the last guard, the last guard resistance. It's been quite a battle, but I think that public opinion is definitely tilted Trump's way, and it's inexorable, I think, that we're coming toward more openness. We're gonna see more daylight in the way government is run.
Do you think President Trump wants a weaker U.S. dollar?
I think he's conflicted on that. I think he knows that a strong dollar is symbolic of a strong country. You know, if the U.S. does everything right, then the dollar will be strong. But in his heart of hearts, I think he'd prefer a weak dollar, certainly now, to help the U.S. through what will be a period of transition as the effects of the tariff and some of his other policies, fiscal policy and tax policy, sort of play through the system. It never helps. It never hurts to have easy credit in difficult times.
The Dow, NASDAQ down something like 7-8% as we speak. How long do you think this slide in the markets will continue?
3 to 5 weeks. And remind me before we're finished with this interview to give you the precise targets for all the lunatic stocks, because they're really within, let's just say, pitching wedge distance of their bear market lows.
What would you define as a lunatic stock?
Stocks that went crazy for no particular reason. The ones that attracted the most attention, that essentially all the institutional money was in these stocks, and none of the institutions sold the stocks. They just continued to go higher and make everybody piles of money and generate supposed trillions of wealth effect for the whole world. Those stocks, of course, include NVIDIA, Google, Amazon, Microsoft, Apple, the usual suspects.
The Magnificent Seven, the so-called?
That was the stupidest name I ever heard, and it took some idiot who probably never got it out of J school to invent that, to coin that term, because there was never anything magnificent about it. And what happens is these yo-yo headline writers, they think back to some movie title they can grab that somehow resonates, but as a metaphor, it doesn't resonate at all. It's about, you know, it's a metaphor with an IQ of 60. So no, these are not magnificent stocks. They were really just lunatic stocks that were out of control.
So as the tariffs roll out around the world, retaliatory tariffs, is this going to cause a worldwide recession?
Everybody's such an expert on it, but I would say that you take, you know, whoever, whichever trollop is producing shows for Bloomberg, whichever talking head she gets on as an expert on tariffs, that person has no better idea what the tariffs are going to bring than Whoopi Goldberg or any of the bozos that are on the View. So it's like anybody's guess. And since the reflex is to say that whatever Trump does is going to precipitate out in disaster, that's what we get. But no one really speaks to the other side of the tariff story, which is that Trump has essentially opened a process of negotiation, the purpose of which is to, I guess you could say, normalize global trade.
Do you think countries are ready to negotiate, or there's got to be long-term effects here before they do?
Why should they go to war? Why should they even wait for long-term effects? You know, everybody's sort of doing a damage assessment. You know, I talk with a buddy of mine who's a wine importer, and he talks about the tariffs as though they were some sort of abstraction. But I asked him, I said, well, what are you going to do about it? And, you know, ordinarily, I mean, just looking at it on the surface, which is how the newspapers treat it, everybody's going to experience this, you know, 20% increase in the price of wine. But will that actually occur? And what will he do in the meantime to head it off at the pass? So he's hard at work, and whatever the worst effect predicted, you're not going to feel it.
So what's your strategy to deal with the situation right now?
My strategy? I don't have a strategy. It's just, as a consumer, I can always make choices. If the price of something I buy that comes imported goes up substantially, then I'll substitute something else. So that's my strategy.
Crude oil has taken a huge drop. Was that the goal of this as well?
There is no goal, really. I mean, when you say goal, you're suggesting there's someone out there with a goal, but there isn't really. Things just happen. And nobody could have predicted crude would collapse the way it did, but it just doesn't for cyclical reasons. It has nothing to do with the tariffs, really. It was just ready to fall, and the tariff news was, I guess, a triggering agent. So the big drop in crude, maybe you could say it's predicting a global depression or some such, but that's not true. I mean, crude is just, it's being its own little lunatic indicator here. And relative to, you know, when you look at the daily price bars, it's simply dropped out of into the lower end of a range where it's been more or less forever. You know, crude has been range trading. Let me get out a take a look at the monthly chart. All right, so crude, for all the, you know, if you were to look at this on the monthly chart, it's just another blip, really. And crude has fallen into about the midpoint of the range that it's traversed since the COVID low in 2020 and the subsequent lunatic high, which is up at about, $140, $131 a barrel. So we've been between a few bucks and 130, and we're in the exact midpoint now, if anyone really cares.
Gold has also gone down, not a lot, but still down. Is it going to hold its own here?
The selling in gold is just a kind of a moron meter. You know, there's no reason. Gold is coming down because if you look at the spike that gold has achieved, the price spike, it's been in a vertical climb since late 2023, all right? So occasionally it corrects. The current correction, let me give you a number here, just so that the mau-mauing that's taking place today doesn't spook you too badly. But if the correction that we're seeing today, hang on here, I'm using TradeStation's horrible platform. All right, so it's come off a high of 3201, and I'm using a target right now of 3533 for June gold. We've come off a 3201 high and currently trading 3039. So we're down $160, but I think it could fall a further $100 here to 29.41 is my target for this correction, basis to June COMEX contract. So just see it for what it is. It's just a garden variety correction. And yeah, it's getting a little overdone because, well, everybody was waiting for that shoe to drop. And the sleazeballs who make the markets in gold, who essentially manipulate the price of gold, they're letting it all happen pretty much at one time to create the impression that maybe if you're smart, you should be out there selling gold, but you shouldn't.
Hold on to it and buy more when it hits around your target of 29.41.
Yeah, that's what I'd suggest.
Is silver, I don't know what the action is on silver right now. What's happening there?
Silver's getting beat up too. It's down more than $2 an ounce here to 29.80. That's basis the May COMEX contract. So it's gotten hit hard, but again, it's just a correction. And keep in mind that silver is correcting without yet having gotten to that blow off stage. Well, we won't call it a blow off, but silver at some point late in this early part of the bull cycle is going to blast off. It's going to outperform gold and make up for lost time. But we haven't seen silver in that speculative surge yet. So it's correcting without having done that yet. That's the good news that lies ahead.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know you're not much of a cryptocurrency person, but taking a look at the market boards today, the only thing that went up today was, I think, the U.S. dollar and Bitcoin.
Crypto is so predictable, and I did put out a chart there that will trade crypto for you for the next couple of months. It tells you where to buy crypto, tells you where to sell it, it tells you where it's going. The current target is $100,000. Everything that happens, you know, to look at crypto and say, well, it's up today when the market's down, it means absolutely nothing. You know, all you could say about crypto is that it's lost the confidence to lead the market, but it can certainly go into a state of chaos, irrespective of what the market is doing on a given day. So I think I'm going to put it on a daily chart so I can give you better crypto right now. And I did say it's as predictable as the morning sunrise, actually. And the dips down to 82.582 are where you buy. You saw it when it rallies to 88.609 and maybe hold a few for an additional upside to that 100.663 target. So there's no mystery about crypto, and there's no reason to think that it's anything special, as it just moves in its own little fog of obfuscation on a given day.
So what are your lunatic stock predictions?
Well, the interesting thing about this bear market is that it's practically over. You know, I expected a lot more. I thought we were going to go quietly into the second Great Depression, and that was it. But what's happened is we've sort of had almost the entire bear market now, and the specific stock targets, these are downside targets that I think will complete the bear market, especially for the lunatic sector stocks. I have Apple going down to Apple currently 193. I see it bottoming at 184.04. Amazon currently 175.90. I see it bottoming at 162.77. Chipotle, 47.75 currently. I think it's going to bottom at either 46.21 or 44.17. Facebook, which Zuckerberg has renamed Meta, currently trading 509. I think it's going to go down to 467.63 before it bottoms. Google, currently 150.42. I think it's going to bottom at 139.38. Microcap, currently 366. I think it's going to come down to 353.96 before it bottoms. And notice I'm giving you two decimals on these, not just for show. This is where you should look for a very precise bottom. I expect these forecasts to be right on a penny. Netflix currently trading 865.15. I think it's going to come down to 788.70. Nvidia currently $94.30. I think it's got another $10 to go and will bottom at 84.22. Tesla, very much on everybody's minds. It seems to be the stock that drives traders the craziest. It's currently trading 241.40. I think it'll come down to 204.93 before it bottoms.
Wow, Rick, those are some interesting predictions, and that's when people swoop in. Your the biggest of all, I guess, you know, Berkshire Hathaway. That's when they buy up, and of course, the brains behind that have a record amount of cash waiting for opportunities caused by a downturn in the markets like this.
Well, but
Warren Buffett.
I haven't had any calls from Berkshire, but they wouldn't surprise me if they're in somewhere near these targets that I just gave you. But it really is a shocker that this bear market that I've been waiting for since 2010 is just, you know, a couple months in and it's practically over.
Anything else we should be keeping a close eye on, Rick?
Norm Eisen. He's supposedly the number one lawfare guy. You know, the reason Trump's in the courts really just trying to restore the prerogatives of the executive branch. It's mainly Norm Eisen. Anywhere where Trump has been thwarted in the courts, it's Norm Eisen. And Norm Eisen was known to be the lawfare kingmaker. You know, he was the one that was running the whole show. But with Jim Kunstler's latest, it revealed that if you were trying to find Norm Eisner and locate the tip of his nose, it would be up John Roberts' butt. The two of them are, well, it's a very incestuous relationship because John Roberts is one of his main, his right-hand man, I guess you could say, is married to a woman who was opposing Trump everywhere in the courts. What's her name? Mary. I'm trying to remember her name. But anyway, John Roberts, his top assistant, is married to a woman who's really opposed Trump at every turn. So it's a very, you're not going to be reading about this right away in the New York Times, but Eisen is the guy that Trump has to put in his crosshairs and just to blow the guy out of the water, really, because he's been a major pestilence in this country. Probably done, well, I don't think anybody's done more to hurt America than Obama, but Eisen is really he's the point man. And so keep your eye on him.
Thank you so much for being on This Week in Money.
Always a pleasure, Jim. I appreciate your inviting me on.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website rickackerman.com. He was speaking to us from South Florida. Coming up, Mike Swanson, next on This Week in Money.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com. This Week in Money is archived online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com.
Welcome back. My guest is Mike Swanson, editor of WallStreetWindow.com. Welcome back to This Week in Money.
Oh, it's great to talk with you.
Mike, can you tell us a bit about Wall Street Window?
Well, it's a simple financial newsletter. I send it out via email, typically twice a week. Sometimes when a lot of stuff's happening in the markets, as we currently are going through, I'll do it much more frequently. But the volatility in the markets has certainly picked up. Since we last spoke, there's no doubt about that.
Mike, when we're into a volatile situation in the markets like this, how important is it to have some informed opinion on what's going on?
Well, in some ways, thinking about this morning, you know, this has been a week of market turmoil. On Thursday, the Dow opened down over 1,000 points. Following a Trump tariff announcement, and that got everyone's attention, and there's a lot of news about it all over the place. But it shouldn't have been shocking that the market would take a tumble if you forget about the news and just focus on what's been going on since New Year's. The United States stock market has been pulling back, and gold has been going up. The dollar has been going down, and most markets around the world up until this week were going up, and even though the U.S. stock market had been declining. And I say this all to suggest that these were underlying market trends coming into this week, and it's more important to focus on the market trends than the daily news items. In fact, it's easy to get caught up in the daily news and then ignore what's really important, and that is that we're in a market decline in the United States, and declines typically end with some sort of panic, washout, or climax to them, and it would appear that the decline obviously is morphed into that. But I learned a big lesson in 2020, and that is that I was so caught up in the news cycle, and we all are. You know, we get the notifications via our phones. You look on social media and so forth, that I wasn't ahead of the curve. The news is always behind the curve, and I missed the COVID thing that hit the whole world. I should have known about it and how important it was going to be a couple weeks ahead of time. So to me, this is a similar situation that, you know, that this was a trend growing and now it's really turning into something that's waking everyone up. As far as the United States, Donald Trump, the relationship the United States has with the rest of the world and how that's impacting the markets and changing in front of our eyes now.
So is it possible the Dow has put in its top and we've seen the NASDAQ pulling back over 15%? Do you think this is a correction or worse?
Well, I kind of think both in the sense that a correction in the sense of a market decline that's not going to continue hopefully for not much longer. As I said a few minutes ago, typically market declines like this do end in a panic washout. We got the VIX on Wednesday over 30%. You know, hopefully the second week of April we get some sort of rally of some sorts. But I do think this is probably a worsening condition than it was last year for the financial markets. It's likely that a top has been put in for the Dow and the NASDAQ. If we rally back up, you know, I very much doubt we'll go through the highs of this year and do much more beyond that if we manage to even do that. To me, this is more like the start of something that could last for quite some time. But we're going to get a rally. We should get a rally. I think back, I've been doing, you know, I know House Street's been along for a long time, and so have I. And if you go back to the year 2000, the stock market cracked that spring in March and April. It had a strong rally into August, and then we really had a bear market that lasted for 2 years. In 2007, the market cracked that August and then rallied into October. And then, of course, you had the bear market in 2008. So to me, this is more likely, when it comes to just talking about the stock market, some sort of transition period when the markets end a bull market and go into a prelude to a bear market. Typically, the volatility does increase as it's doing now, but we should still get a rally of some sorts. But I really am concerned about 2026, 2027, 2028, the years to come, because the United States debt situation has been growing and growing and growing. The trade deficit, the government spending deficit, the debt to GDP is on track to get over 130% in the next 3 years. Typically, that creates a serious economic problem for a country and its financial markets. So I'm afraid that's where we're headed. A lot of the efforts in the Trump administration to cut spending has been said. They're doing this to head off a crisis, but I don't think they're going to be able to cut spending enough to do so. And these tariff moves, in some sense, may be some sort of attempt to set up a situation where the Trump administration in the future will be able to, or hope it will be able to, negotiate about its debts to lower the tariffs. One of the top economic advisors in the Trump administration put out a very lengthy research paper saying that it could do that, use the tariffs, jam up the tariffs, then in a couple of years tell countries such as Japan, look, we don't want to pay off your 10-year treasury bonds that you own anymore. We want to swap them out for 100-year bonds and fix our debts that way. So a lot of wild things are likely to take place in the next couple of years, bigger even than what we've seen this week. And I think one reason gold has been going up is because foreign investors around the world are trying to hedge themselves against any future possibility, and the dollar weakness is probably a part of that. But I think, you know, if you think about trends, the U.S. market's been falling. It's now finally hitting global markets. We should be the end of that decline. We should get a rally. But the bigger underlying trends, I believe it's going to be much easier to make money going long gold, silver, precious metals than it is going to be the U.S. stock market. And therefore, that's what I'm most focused on, not only with my own investments, but what I'm trying to talk about and encourage people to get more involved in. That's gold and silver and even mining stocks. So Wednesday, when the NASDAQ was down 4% around 10:30 in the morning, the GDX Gold Stock Index, or ETF, was actually in the green. So, you know, I think that may get people's attention even more, finally.
The U.S. dollar's pulled back after a high early in the year. Are you bullish or bearish on the U.S. dollar?
Well, I've got to say I'm bearish on it. However, you know, currencies typically don't, you know, have giant moves in a short amount of time. And really, the U.S. dollar had been in a very bullish trend since, let's say, 2020. in the previous 10 years, that decade before 2020. But it was a very slow, you know, trendingly bullish bull market for the U.S. dollar. And I would suggest probably we're now in the opposite, a very slow, bearish trend for the U.S. dollar. And I also think or linked to it, that the bond market in the United States is in a secular bearish trend, meaning that long term, over the next 10 years, the value of bond funds denominated in U.S. bonds is going to fall in value, and interest rates are going to be in a uptrend. Last year, when the Federal Reserve lowered rates, interest rates in the U.S. actually spiked up. So I think that's a sign that something is wrong with the U.S. bond debt market and possibly even the currency. A big warning sign when the Fed lowered rates and interest rates went up anyway and bond funds fell in value. So I take that very seriously, and I think that means we are in a meaningfully bearish trend for the U.S. dollar.
Does it look like inflation and interest rates are under control in the U.S.?
No, I don't believe they are. And again, I would take the Federal Reserve meeting last year as evidence of that. If you think back to September, the Federal Reserve lowered interest rates by 50 basis points and predicted that the CPI inflation would go down to 2%. And as I said, interest rates, the bond yield on the 10-year bond, went up instead of down after they lowered rates, continued to do that through the entire rest of the year. And the CPI inflation started to go back up in January and February. And now we have these tariffs, which is likely to add more inflationary pressure in the United States. And if they lower rates because of recession later this year, that's just going to add fuel to the fire. So I don't think inflation's in control. And in fact, the average American would actually agree with me, because according to the Consumer Confidence Survey, Americans are expecting higher inflation over the next couple of years. So that's a very troubling situation, and kind of like a trap the Federal Reserve's in. If the economy slows down, employment goes up, they're going to want to lower interest rates. But if they do lower interest rates, inflation's going to grow. It's the total recipe for stagflation for the next couple years.
Gold at $3,100 or higher, where does it go from? Where does it go to from here?
Well, gold's had a tremendous run since last year when it broke the 2,200 level last year in March. And as you said, went above 3,100 recently. And that 3,100 move was like a big move in from 2,900 or so, 2,850, in a fast amount of time. So markets that go up that fast can have a pullback. You know, it's nothing for gold to pull back $100 when it's had such a tremendous run, even $200 or $250. So a pullback from the high is no reason to be alarmed. And I think gold's going to go up really, you know, from here, even if we get such pullbacks for the years to come. I think the move in gold has just begun, and the gold should be something that everyone has some certain amount of in their portfolio. In the 1970s, it was commonplace for an investment advisor to tell their clients, put 10% of your money, or 6% at the very minimum, in gold. Because by the time you got to 1980, the Dow wasn't doing much. There was tremendous inflation in the United States. So I think that's eventually what a lot of people are going to wake up and realize they should be doing, even though they should already have been doing it, because gold has been outperforming the U.S. stock market now for the past 25 years. It's done better than the Dow, even though in the 2000s, or the 2010s, I mean, the teens, gold didn't do as well. You know, the stock after 2009, when the stock market bottomed, until let's say 2020, gold lagged the U.S. stock market for the most part. But you know, the situation is different, and you can do a ratio, relative strength ratio, dividing gold by the S&P 500, the Dow, and that's going up. So I think that's just going to continue going forward. You know, gold, in a way, if you think back to 2020, the S&P 500 that March and April fell over 30%. Gold fell half as much and then got back to highs faster than the U.S. stock market. Gold is less volatile than stocks, and I believe has more upside from here. So a huge advocate of investing and holding gold.
Does silver look like it could break out or put in a double top?
Well, silver hasn't broken out yet. Gold did and went up to new highs, but silver's remain below the $34 to $35 an ounce resistance zone over the past year. It's tested a couple times, but is yet to break it. I believe it will ultimately break it. Typically, gold goes up first in a big metals bull market, and then silver eventually breaks out. So I think that's what's going to happen at some point this year. I do think silver will break out probably after this current bout of big volatility in all the markets plays out. And I think it's, you know, a short-lived thing for the moment. But, you know, when the Dow or the NASDAQ fall as much as they did on Wednesday, you're going to get margin selling in everything, because there are people that borrowed money to buy stocks, or they bought risky things that they shouldn't have bought or didn't realize they're incredibly risky, such as Bitcoin, and they end up getting margin calls, and there's probably a little bit of selling because of that in everything, including gold and silver. But that's going to should be done with soon.
Is the NASDAQ stock index versus the money supply a good indicator of anything?
Well, I think it is when you're in a strong bull market, like we saw in the 2000s or the 1990s and in the 2010s. But when you're in a bear market with the NASDAQ or the U.S. stock market, changes in the money supply don't really help push stocks up. In the 2000s, when the tech bubble burst, the NASDAQ went down for 3 years, even though the Federal Reserve was lowering interest rates over and over again, often doing intermeeting rate reductions and increasing the money supply like crazy, didn't stop the bear market. So it's not an indicator I pay much attention to at this moment in time.
Do you think Tesla, TSLA, on the NASDAQ has a huge short position?
Well, it does. Statistically, I checked this morning, 20% of the trading float on Tesla is shorted. And that is considered to be a large short position. There was a time a couple years ago when the shares of Tesla were shorted than any other stock. I don't think that's the case at the moment, but it is still a huge short position. However, Tesla and NVIDIA are the top traded stocks by individual investors in the United States. And the weird thing about Tesla is it's also the most owned stock by individual investors, but not by institutions. So there's, I would say, a mania in people trading Tesla, both long and short. I personally don't trade the stock. I just watch it go up and down, and the volatility attracts people who want to trade. I don't want to trade in and out of stuff. I want to take positions to hold, and that's one reason I'm focused on things not as volatile, like gold. And frankly, mining stocks, I think, have bigger upside than the Tesla bulls imagine Tesla has without the risk. But it is a stock a lot of people obsess about and want to short. And so forth.
For years, Democrats have been buying Teslas. Now Democrats likely are vandalizing Teslas owned by fellow Democrats. Does that make sense?
Well, a lot of stuff doesn't make sense anymore. And we live in crazy times when there's economic instability and political instability in a country. And that's what's going on in the United States, frankly. Last year, we had a president who appeared to be senile, leading the Democrat Party and sitting in the White House. And now we have a president with about whose approval rating is slowly dropping, who Democrats, some, you know, talk as if he's Hitler, and many Republicans worship. So he's a very polarizing figure, and Tesla founder Elon Musk linked himself to Trump and kind of rebranded Tesla. He called himself, Elon called himself Dark MAGA last year, and now he's got a lot of Republican fans, but a lot of Democrats have turned on the company and the car, and that's why, you know, you see these stories of them vandalizing. All that said, though, this story is getting a lot of attention. You know, I would suggest it's getting so much attention that it's making it appear that there's more Teslas being vandalized than is really happening. And it's kind of blocking out the bigger story that, or it's a news item that is kind of like a part of the circus that's distracting people from the real story. And that is our changing position, ours, I'm speaking of the United States, in the rest of the world. We're in a tariff war now, but that tariff war is not new in the sense of the United States' relations with other countries has grown more tense. The relations with Canada got more tense, with Mexico, with Greenland, with Europe, with the meeting the other week where the leader of Ukraine visited Trump in the White House and it blew up. So the tariffs are just part of that trend. And that trend, I think, is really the big story. And it's the United States is ripping up the world order that it helped to create after World War II, the creation of the Bretton Woods Agreement, NATO, the United Nations, and free trade. And now the country and Trump basically is ripping that apart. And there's going to be economic consequences and changes in the rest of the world is going to react to it. It's not going to be an easy ride for anybody. And that's the real story. But it's not an easy story to explain or understand. And most media outlets or many media outlets in the United States are just going to stick to the story of either demonizing Trump or praising him and attacking anyone who, you know, asks any questions, or finding stories that make the viewers feel like they're victims of the rest of the world. So the stock market decline will be blamed on manipulators or foreign agents or something like that. And people who are fans of Trump are also fans of Elon, and they're going to talk about these crazy people, you know, vandalizing Tesla cars. But the big story is much harder to understand, but more important.
What do you think is going to happen on the energy market?
Well, we're getting, short-term, a pullback in energy. And I think that's part of the overall volatility in the global markets. But I think energy will get bullish once the current bout of volatility comes to an end. I think we'll be seeing energy prices go up along with commodities, once there's a short-term low put in sometime soon.
Mike, how can people subscribe to Wall Street Window?
Well, just type in the website, wallstreetwindow.com, and there's a thing to do that.
Mike, thank you so much for being on This Week in Money.
Thank you. Great to talk with you.
My guest has been Mike Swanson, editor of wallstreetwindow.com. And that wraps up our show for this week. We'd like to thank our guests, Ross Clark, Rick Ackerman, and Mike Swanson. And thank you for listening. If you have any questions for the show or for our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. I'm Jim Goddard. We'll be back next week with more This Week in Money.
Comments made on This Week in Money are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any manner whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. This Week in Money is a production of How Street Media Incorporated. Executive producer is Tom Allen.